Welcome to the show. It's Ivy Nation Sports Talk. We're up and rolling. He's Ben Stadario. I'm Sean Stiers. Hope you're having a good middle of the week Wednesday. It is mailbag day on the show, so bring your questions as you're filing into the chat. Of course, hit the like button as well. I'm a little tired today, Vince. I don't know why.
Yeah, middle of the week, and it's like it's a short week, but yet it by the time you get to Wednesday, it doesn't feel like it's a short week. I don't know. It's just it's a weird, you know, Labor Day weekend or Labor Day week, I guess the following week is always just weird. Like I think part of it was, you know, the anticipation of week one and everything that goes with it. And I'm not saying there's a letdown, but now we're, you know, preparing for Northern Illinois. And
I was thinking, you know, it is kind of, you know, it's like with all that build, you know, waiting for Texas A&M. It's like, boom, we're in the middle of week two right now.
I know.
You know, that seriously. Is kind of like a, it's like, yep.
But
it starts flying by.
You know, home game atmosphere. I am excited to get a look at the new jerseys and how they, you know, glisten in the sun and all of those different things, you know. But, you know, I always love a home game weekend regardless of who they're playing, you know. But, yeah, so we'll see how it goes. But
first,
you know,
home game weekend, always, you know, yeah, getting back kind of into the routine again, back in the old confines.
It's supposed to be like football weather, too. It's supposed to be like 60 degrees, like. I can get on board with that, man.
Yeah, it's been a little chillier this week already. Like, I looked out my door this morning. There was fog.
I know, right?
Outside. And
okay. It's low 80s, and then it's going to get a little hotter tomorrow, and then that cold front moves in, and it's going to dip hard. Like, it's going to be a jeans and hoodie day at Friday Night Football. So, I'm excited about that.
I love it. I love it. Already time. All right. Well, again, mailbag night. So, bring them
Let's
on.
Let's go.
We've got a lot of salty questions queued up and ready to go. Let's just start with this one. Line coach achieved the most with his group, given the circumstances Saturday? Joe Rudolph, Al Washington.
So just based on Saturday, I've got to give the nod to Joe Rudolph. I mean, he's the one that had all the unproven guys, and it was far from perfect. Don't get me wrong. But there was nothing that happened that was catastrophic, right, that turned the tide of the game or, you know, anything like that. And while Riley Leonard is absolutely part of the equation, there were no sacks given up, right? I mean, it was too many negative plays. I think it was 7 negative plays. That's too many. But no sacks, no, you know, allowable fumbles or, you know, anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with you, defensive line played well, but not as disruptive as I was hoping that they would be. So they didn't quite live up to my expectations.
It's funny you said that. And I agree with everything. I think it's Al Washington, given the fact, like, think about the veterans that you had on the defensive line versus nothing, basically,
seriously,
on the offensive line. But what you were saying about the defensive line and the disruptiveness, it was almost like, remember, like, early last year, there were a few games where we kept going, man, what's, you know, like this defensive line, it's like it's playing okay, but it doesn't seem like it's that disruptive.
And yeah,
it felt like there was a point where they just finally just unleashed them and kind of let them go. And I was saying last night that it felt a little bit like they were almost there to occupy Texas A&M offensive line bodies and just let the linebackers do the work. That's kind of like looking back on it. Especially that's kind of the feel that I got just watching what they were doing. That's not to say they were never disruptive or anything, but it just felt like it was more of that than true, just them attacking and that kind of stuff. But maybe they were,
and I wonder if that was,
I did hear Al Golden say, I did see Al Golden say in the transcript that I got, you know, that they were very conscious of making sure they weren't going to allow explosive plays and stuff like
okay.
that. So that could have played into it. I don't know.
Okay. Fair enough. Of course you don't want explosive plays, and I wouldn't even stress about that if you're a defensive coach at Notre Dame, because I don't think that's going to happen very often, either by design or just because these guys are so good. I agree with you that that's the way it played out on the defensive line. I don't know if that was the goal. You know what I mean? Like
And I don't
played
either.
Well,
it just did. That's just, you know, the impression that I got.
Yeah. No, I totally, totally agree with you. That was the end game. That's what ended up happening. And it was fine. It worked out fine. I mean, it allowed the linebackers to kind of do their thing, and it put, you know, the secondary on an island at times, but they're good enough to do that. So I'm cool with it. You know what I mean? So I still want the defensive line to be more disruptive as you move forward in the season. And they're going to have to be more disruptive once you get to the postseason, right? It was good enough to win this game. I mean, look, Texas A&M outside of the one drive, and it's a bit of an anomaly, they never really threatened offensively. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so it was good enough. I mean, it was good enough. I'm picky, man. I want it to be better.
Salty says we need to look into testosterone supplements because we need more staying power. You know, I have tried some of these kind of herbal-based. You know, I'm a little older than you, and I've tried some of this stuff, and it just none of it short of, I think, like true, you know, testosterone replacement therapy. You know, I think that's probably the only thing that would help me if I'm looking for that.
I don't know. I'm that guy who's very I don't know. I'm not a big supplement guy. My son is the complete opposite. It's like he's got a pharmacy upstairs. But I'm just very skeptical of all of it. You know what I mean? I love science. I think science is legit. But I don't know. I'm very skeptical. I got plenty of testosterone. I'm good. I'm plenty good.
Well, just, you know, you keep getting a little older. For now. Mine is, you know, like when I had went to do my annual checkup. Physical and all that kind of stuff. You know, they do the blood test and everything. And mine is like, it's still within what they consider normal range, but it's getting on the verge of the low range. I mean, you know,
I was going to say
the older you get, the more it happens.
But I'll let the priest do my talking for me.
Nothing to prove.
Vince has five kids. He's got nothing left to prove. I'm just saying.
It's not a lie. Not a lie at all. There was one that I was looking for here.
A special one.
Where did it go?
I have done no starring.
Oh, here it is.
Starring. Okay.
Here it is. I posted the snap counts for all the players, the PFF, Pro Football Focus snap counts, the other day on the boards. And everybody loves the snap counts. So I might have to start doing something every week with the snap counts, basically, you know, kind of do that. But which offensive and defensive players do you think get more snaps against NIU? Here's kind of... There were 73 defensive snaps. Xavier Watts was the only player to play all 73. Benjamin Morrison had 67, Shuler 60, Clark 59, Gray 49, defensive lineman Cross 51, Botello 48, Mills 41, linebackers Kaiser 57, Sneed 31, Bowen 30, KVA 21, Osbury 17. Offensive lineman. And Riley Leonard played all 67 possible snaps. I think the biggest thing that stood out to me, Bo Collins, 59 snaps out of 67, far and away the most, you know, not Riley Leonard or a lineman. Greathouse, 48, Mitchell, 32, Thomas, 23, Love, 30 for the running backs, Price, 24, Ford, 13, and then Flanagan, 43 for the tight ends, Raritan, 24, Evans, 10. So that's just kind of a little snapshot there. I could probably share the screen if you wanted to look at it. Do you want to look at it? So see it.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I've got some thoughts, but I do want to, I was trying to keep
probably
track
help
of
if you can
you
kind of
saying.
Keep your eye on it. Yeah.
I was keeping track, but so I don't know if it's going to change my answer, but I like the question. I do.
Yeah. Cause I've actually been thinking about this because it's going to look different this week just because you're taking on a different kind of opponent.
Right.
Right. So can you see that? Okay. Do I need?
Yeah, no, I can see it perfectly. I went full screen over here. So we're good to go. But yeah, you know, for me offensively, I still think that the offensive line, even when they pull Leonard, which is inevitable in this game, I think that they allow Angeli or whoever they put in second, which would be Angeli. I think they're going to let him operate with the first team offensive line. I just think that they need as many reps together as you possibly can get. And because they'll be out there with the first team, and I think they should be out there with the second team skill guys as well. I think, you know, name an offensive lineman, right? I think all five of those guys will either be in together or out together. So I think the offensive line will have the most offensively. And then defensively, I'm actually going to go with, because I think a very similar thing I think will happen on the defensive side of the ball. I think they'll pull some of the veterans first. And so I'm going to go Drake Bowen. I think he gets the most.
Okay.
Because I think he'll be in with the ones, right? But then he'll collect some of those Kaiser snaps when Kaiser comes out. You know what I mean? Like, I think Kaiser would sit first, but I think Bowen, maybe some of the young guys continue to rotate. And so since he had as many, you know, nine more than KVA at the time, I'll go Drake Bowen. I think he'll have the most.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I do, you know, like, I wonder, I think that that's probably a good rationale to look at it that way, because like, even like, you're not going to keep Xavier Watts in there any longer than you have to. You're not going to keep Howard Cross or Riley Mills in there any longer.
It could
longer
be Shuler.
Yeah.
So the same rationale, right?
Yeah.
But I think they have a lot of faith in their next group of safeties that I think they would want to get them the time.
I think that's where I'm going to go with Shuler, actually, because of that. Because if Watts comes off, I think that you want to keep getting Shuler as many reps as possible. You know, maybe it ends up being, you know, like Talich, you know, like even if he's playing next to him or that, or you might even just, you know, Rod Heard didn't play as much true safety last week. They kind of moved him in some different spots. You know, like, they basically had him playing as a linebacker, you know, a couple of different times, you know, like covering the middle of the field, but they had Shuler there as well. I just think the linemen are going to end up with the most snaps. If you ask me skill position, I would probably go. See, I wonder how they're going to use the receivers, because we know that we're going to see some younger guys, and there's a specific question about that. I'll just go with the linemen and say that I'll say Thomas. I'll say Jaden Thomas ends up with the most of the skill guys.
This is a good one. This is a good one. Because Faison's going to be out already, right? Mm-hmm. And I think they'll sit Great House. He doesn't need extra reps, you know what I mean? And so, yeah, I could see Jaden Thomas being that guy. Although he does qualify as a veteran, though. You know what I mean? And so they may sit him.
Because he's still – maybe they do, because just with his history, maybe you don't want to mess with getting him tweaked up and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
DK, I apologize. I said it was DJ who asked the question. I haven't edited it on the board. Maybe I should, but it was actually K who asked for the snap counts. DJ, gotcha. DK. I mean, the letters are literally right next to each other, but I apologize for for not seeing which D.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of jokes there. I'm just gonna let lie.
I thought so too.
Just gonna let it go. Prize Picks is America's number one daily fantasy sports app with over 5 million active members. Prize Picks is the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Unlike other apps on Prize Picks, it's just you against the numbers. All you do is pick more or less on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. Get in on the daily action with your friends and become part of the Prize Picks community today. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000. I'm a Bears fan, so this one gets me really excited. One Caleb Williams passing yard gets you one win on Prize Picks every week in September. That's right. Only 1 yard gets you an automatic win every football weekend in September. 4 weeks of free W's. Don't miss this deal on Prize Picks, because it's gone when September ends. Think Tyreek Hill will get more than 90.5 yards in week one? Aaron Jones runs for more than 66.5 yards? Cook up hot takes with your friends and win real money this football season when you and your crew run your game on Prize Picks. Prize Picks also has college picks all ready to go for you as well. Get in before game one hits, and you can predict how many passing yards your favorite college quarterback will hit. For me, I think Riley Leonard's going to go above 2,550 and a half yards, so I'm going to take that one. And I'm going to combine it with Quinn Ewers to throw 2,999 and a half yards. Put those together and bing, bang, boom, baby. I'm going to be a winner. You just wait and see. I'm coming up on my 1 year anniversary of depositing my first $10, and I received an instant $10 bonus. If you have the skills, you can play for a shot at turning your $10 into $1,000. Download the Prize Picks app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code IRISH on Prize Picks for a deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, run your game. You've had Wendy's nugs dipped in sauce, but have you had them covered in sauce? Wendy's new saucy nugs takes the crispy and spicy nugs that you love and turn them up to 11. Choose between flavors like buffalo, honey barbecue, garlic parm, or if you're a real heat seeker, try spicy ghost pepper only on Wendy's signature spicy nugs. I dare ya. That's 7 delicious ways to try the nugs you already love. Pick a flavor, grab some extra napkins, and prepare to nug like you've never nugged before. For a whole new way to nug, it's gotta be Wendy's at participating U.S. Wendy's.
Let's go into this one. Isaiah says, Freeman said K.K. Smith will play and that we'll probably see Micah Gilbert Saturday. Do you think Cam Williams also plays Saturday or at all this year?
Oh, I think this is definitely one of the games that they probably have circled for guys that are going to end up redshirting. I mean, if you think about the opponents that you have a good opportunity to play some depth pieces, right? It would be Northern Illinois. It would be Miami, maybe Navy, maybe Army. Those would be the four off the top of my head that I would pick, and this is definitely one of them. And so you can play four games without burning your red shirt. And so I think that he could definitely be, this is definitely a game where you could see him. And I would not be surprised if that was the case.
Yeah. I think that like the fourth quarter, if the game goes the way that we think it's going to go, that you're going to see a lot of those guys, you know, you're basically going to see all the guys who are not on the three deep, basically getting some opportunities out there. What they do with the quarterbacks, that's going to be a good question, because I've already seen people, oh, I want to see Angeli and Minchie, and other people, I want to see Carr too. Well, I don't know if you're going to see every quarterback. Yes, that's right.
I mean, unless this is just an absolute slaughterhouse, which it could be. I mean, it's definitely possible. Getting four quarterbacks in is going to be complicated. I'll just say that.
Yes. I concur with that for sure. Mark wants to know if we're surprised how popular Jason Kelce has become post-retirement, podcast, commercial endorsements, NFL TV gig. I mean, he is everywhere right now. I don't know what's like, because you've got the streaming services, but the channels I watch, which is a lot of NFL Network, especially this week, because I don't get any ESPN channels right now because they're in a dispute with DirecTV. So I'm getting ESPNs. But I'm a little bit, but like that whole thing blew up. Like even my wife started listening to that Kelce podcast last year, you know, after the, you know, the whole Taylor Swift involvement all that kind of stuff. I mean, I think that Jason Kelce's wife is probably the one who's the most disappointed about his retirement, because I felt like she was getting a lot more attention as well. And she just kind of go away.
Wow, not a fan. All right.
No, I'm not.
I will say that he is getting the residual effects of his brother's relationship. There's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. But he's also a big personality. I mean, he's Pat McAfee, right? That was still playing. And when he would go to his brother's games and he's got his shirt off and he's doing
chugging beers.
Sound familiar? Like, yeah. I mean, that apparently is what draws eyeballs right now. And look, Kelce is a smart guy. I mean, I've heard him do some analysis work and talk about the game. He can absolutely talk about the game. You know what I mean? And so you add the personality pieces to it, and just he's kind of, you know, he's every man, right? He's every guy's man. wants to go out and tailgate with everybody and all that stuff. It's a combination to me of the Pat McAfee effect and the Jason Kelce, Taylor Swift effect. He is benefiting from all of that.
Interesting. He's in a lot of commercials. He is everywhere. And they signed a huge contract for that podcast a couple of weeks ago.
Like, did they really?
Multi-millions to do that thing.
Where's our multi-millions?
I know. Like, why don't we have an NFL player attached to us?
I mean, there's another. I mean,
why don't we have Taylor Swift out pimping
our? There's an NFL player, former NFL player attached to another Notre Dame podcast. I don't think they're making millions. So apparently, you got to find the right one.
Former NFL player?
I don't know. I thought he played in the NFL.
I don't know which one you're talking about. So,
no, it's all right. I want to bring up people that are our competitors.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Joe says, if you're from Philly, you're not surprised at all. I mean, he is an offensive lineman. It's pretty rare that an offensive lineman.
That's true.
This kind of.
But I mean, even before this whole, he was doing the Christmas album and he was doing all this other stuff. So, I mean, he's kind of always been out there, you know, just more regionally than nationally.
And before the last. National. Before the last couple years, the main thing I remember him for is when they won the Super Bowl and they did the parade. He wore like the genie hat or whatever, and he gave the crazy speech up there.
Yeah,
on he obviously has a big personality. I mean, that's what I remember him for the most. But like, I mean, you're talking about two brothers who are probably both going to end up in the Hall of Fame when it's all said and done.
It doesn't hurt that they're both really good players, right? Yeah. I mean, that doesn't hurt any of this because they both go to the postseason and, you know, all of that. So, yeah, that doesn't hurt.
TK wants to know, is someone who only roots for one player a bad fan? Let's use wide receivers as an example. If this guy only pulls for one guy versus the room, isn't that poor behavior and a bad fan? Someone to be aware of. I wonder who we could be talking about here.
I feel like this is a direct shot at somebody. And I don't know that I want to get in the middle of that.
Somebody who likes peanuts, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know that I want to be in the middle of that whole situation. But, you know, you can have a favorite player. That's totally fine. But you better be rooting for everybody else, too.
Right.
That's my take on that situation. And I think in this particular case, that is the case. Right? I think this particular human does root for the whole team and the whole room, but unabashedly enjoys one player.
Joe says, do we see Minshew or Carr on Saturday? Case in point, here we go. In other words, is this game in the bag by the third?
It should be. I'm not going to predict that it will be, but it should be. And if that's the case, then you're going to see backups in the fourth quarter. Now, are there going to be enough possessions to get all of those guys in? That's going to be a little bit tougher, obviously. So I would say no, you're not. You might see Minshew, but I don't think you're going to see Carr. Because I think Carr's still the fourth guy.
Yeah, I mean, we got to see a little of Minshew last year because, you know, there were a couple of different times where Angeli got to come in. Angeli started the second half against Tennessee State, and that gave Minshew a late opportunity to get a few snaps in there. I don't see it being that out of hand by halftime. I mean, one of the questions I have about this game is just how dialed in is this team going to be after that big environment and everything else last week. I know Jalen Snead was saying the right stuff yesterday. So, I mean, we'll see with that Marcus Freeman and where this program is going and where it's, you know, wants to be and all those different things. I mean, we are going to see another quarterback out there who's only started 5 career games for Northern Illinois. He's been around for, this is his 5th year. It's either his 4th or his 5th, but his career started in 2021. So 1, 2, 3, 4. So it's his 5th year. So he's been around. It's only his 5th start. If Notre Dame takes care of business, I guarantee we see Angeli. I don't know what they're going to do with those other guys. Because I don't think they just want to roll a bunch of guys. You know, like the quarterback position specifically, you want to give whoever the number two guy is some quality snaps, as you said. Let him play behind the first team offensive line for a while and those kind of things. Let him play with some of the first team guys before they start to transition, you know, with some of the other guys coming off the bench and stuff like that. I don't know about Minchie. Like, I would say decent chance for Minchie, but again, it could end up being like last year where it's just like a drive at the end of the game and that kind of thing.
Yeah. It just depends on what plan they have. If that's, you know, what they want to do, you know what I mean? Like, it just depends on what they want to do. And if they want to get the third guy in, they'll get the third guy in. You know, if they want to get all four guys in, then they'll get all four guys in. It just really depends on what they want to do. I just think it'd be tough from a continuity standpoint to do that. I could also see a situation where, you know, Angeli gets the backup reps this time, and then maybe against Miami, Miami of Ohio, then Minchie gets the backup reps. And then maybe against Navy, maybe that's CJ Carr's turn to get backup reps. Yeah. You know what I mean? I just don't.
Army. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they could do it that way. It just all depends on.
Because, I mean, I would think that they want to get Carr on the field at some point.
I would think so. Season. Yes, I would agree with you.
But it's difficult when you've got two other quality guys in front of him. You know,
right. If you are anticipating that he's going to be your starter next year, you better get him some reps this year. There's really no excuse not to. So I'll just put it that way.
Yeah. With a new kicker, punter, long snapper, short snapper, and holder, did Marty Biagi achieve the most of all the Notre Dame coaches in the Texas A&M game?
No, he didn't achieve the most. He achieved a lot for having all new guys. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And in theory, he coached up the guys that have been on the roster, and that would be both snappers and the holder. And so you got to give him credit, no doubt about it. But if you whittle it down to plays on the field, I mean, it's minuscule in comparison to offense and defense and as the head coach as well. So,
I mean, the only negatives, I think, with the special teams were just some of the punts, you know, like
they just looked off. Like, I, you know, the line drives, and he said he you know, he
saved that for rapid fire. I don't know if you looked at the rapid fire.
I did. I did. And so, yeah, I don't want to go too in depth with that, but I think that was hogwash. I think I don't think that's what they wanted to do at all.
Okay. All right. Like I said, save it. I knew it'd get you fired up.
Oh, it did.
As soon as I saw that.
No, it did.
In that transcript, I was like, this is Vince material right here. Thanks for the super chat, Tyler. Whose hype do you buy into more after week one? USC, Penn State, or Miami, and why?
USC, because their offense is usually pretty good, right? And they have a coach with a proven track record offensively. And I think I still wasn't all that impressed with their defense, if I'm being honest, right? So I think they have the ability to sustain some offensive, firepower and scoring points and some things like that. So I think USC has a track record of being good, especially offensively. Penn State has no track record of winning big games, so I don't care that they won in week one. That's not a big game. And look, Miami looked great, but it was 1 week. Let's see what happens when they meet a little adversity at some point. You know what I mean? I'm still not 100% sold on Cam Ward, if I'm being honest. And again, I need to see what they can do more, you know, down the line. And look, USC doesn't have an easy stretch, but I just still have more faith in them than I do the other two.
I'm kind of in the same boat. It's between USC and Penn State for me. Penn State just, you know, blasted West Virginia, but at the same time, they did that to open last season as well. And now they were still decent, did make the playoff, but like, if you're going to ask me which team has the better chance to make it to the playoff, it's probably Penn State, because I think they've got a little bit easier road than USC. And they've got fewer questions because now,
right?
Okay, like, what exactly is USC's defense? It looked better, but like you said, still some question marks there. And how good is Miller Moss? How good is all of that going to be over the entirety of the season? But at the same time, I'll probably lean a little bit more toward USC, since they did beat an LSU team that was supposed to still have a pretty good offense. They had the same defensive question, you know, but, you know, only 47 total points in that game, and both teams had huge defensive questions going into it. But again, I don't see Penn State really being that much different from any other
right.
Penn State team. They're definitely at a stage where they're more consistent, but I think I buy a little bit more into USC.
Yes.
Because of the chances with that offense.
Yep.
Because that's two games in a row where, you know, Miller Moss has been pretty decent, really. So
Salty's not happy with my answer on the special teams question.
Uh-oh.
He said he thought he lofted one down the middle for me, and I whiffed. Sorry, buddy.
That was a fat one, he said. You whiffed on it.
I mean, I get it. I get where you're coming from, but essentially he's a position coach. Even though he's a special teams coordinator, as far as the snapper, the holder, the kick, you're a position coach. And I wouldn't put him above any of the other position coaches. In fact, corners played pretty darn well. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of other positions that played really well too. So, you know, he did a great job. No doubt about it. He did a great job. But not ready to go there.
DK says Kelly beat LSU on his own. I mean, it feels like he's done that in all three season openers so far, really.
Yeah.
When you think about it.
Yeah. Not great.
Notre Dame's Wine and Cheese. I don't think we've seen this handle before. Says, I don't know if you announced a tailgate, but if you do, when is it? I think Salty also asked about a tailgate. Have you heard any details on a tailgate for this game? I have not. I'm usually the last to hear about any tailgate information for what it's worth. So,
yeah, I have not heard squat diddly. So I don't think there's going to be one this week. It's going to be when, you know, Brian's parents are in town, whenever that is. And I don't know the plans for that. So
gotcha. Also, would you rather players walk the penalty line to be chirping on the field or show no fire but be safe from penalty? And he said in another post that he's referencing the Bo Collins could have been a penalty but wasn't a penalty.
And it should have been a penalty if we're being honest. I mean, he pushed the guy. Like, you can't push a guy, especially right in front of the official. He's lucky that, you know, a Notre Dame staffer or whoever it was, it might have been Coach Brown, I'm not 100% sure, you know, stepped in, is like, what are you doing? And then he immediately turned around and apologized to the referee.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he kind of got lucky on that one. Look, I want my, especially receivers, man, like, I want them chirping. I want them in the ear of the DB, as long as they can back it up, number one. But you've got to know where the line is as far as getting
and the physical. Line is putting your hands on another guy. You just can't do that, especially when the play's over.
Like, hey, man, you just made a hell of a catch. Talk your talk. Like, I'm cool with that. But you don't need to push him in the back when he's walking away. You know, that's
well, and I guess you don't know, you know, like if there were some other things that were being said. I think that they were kind of going back. And maybe the official was aware of that, and that's why he didn't throw the flag.
Definitely possible. You know? Yeah. So, good call.
I don't know. Like, exactly. Because obviously Bo Collins pushed him for a reason. It wasn't just, you know, because it's like, hey, I made a great play. Now I'm going to shut. You know, there was some stuff going on there. But again, you know, like, he came out and talked to the media last night and he owned up to it and said, hey, I've got to be better. You know, I want to be fired up and, you know, do all that stuff for the team. But
he's a veteran. Be smarter. Like, he knows. Yep. He knows better. But, I mean, he was fired up. Like, that was a hell of a catch. I mean, I'd be fired up. You should be fired up. If I'm Marcus Freeman, I'm telling him, like, dude, that was a clutch, massive catch for our team. Be fired up. Show your emotion. Just don't push the guy. Like,
yeah.
You gotta know where the line is. That's all.
Have you watched the Here Come the Irish on Peacock, the two episodes that they dropped last week?
I sure have.
Yes, so have I. So Joe wants to know what you think.
Look, it was good enough that I'm upset I don't get to watch another one until the season's over. You know, I mean, there was some good stuff in there. And, you know, I like following, you know, Marcus Freeman around and, you know, some of that kind of stuff. And, you know, it was very interesting to, you know, see them vote for captains, for example. And, you know, just some of that behind the scenes stuff. Now, some of it I've known or knew, and I don't have to see it. But, like, some of that behind the scenes stuff is pretty cool. And I would imagine, now that they're getting into the regular season, there's going to be a lot of cool stuff. And my challenge is going to be remembering what the heck was even going on during weeks 1, 2, 3, like at the end of the season. You know what I mean?
So, I mean, honestly, what I was thinking is dropping it 2 days before the season started. Like, maybe they should have dropped it a week earlier so that, you know what I mean? Because, like, going into that weekend, like, it's complete. Like, that's one of the – because I think we would have talked about it if it was a week earlier, because we still had a week to go before the game. But once the game hit, that's all anyone obviously wants to talk about, for good reason. I think it's just kind of gotten swallowed up by the start of the season 2 days later. I thought it was pretty good. I like the first episode a little better than the second episode. Like, they followed both Xavier Watts and Jack Kaiser in the second episode. And I felt like doing both of those stories, like, especially when you consider, again, they had the whole off season of content to put into this. I felt like, two player profiles might've been a bit much for one episode, like, of that coming into the season kind of thing, when they had so much other stuff on the plate. But I thought it was well done. Pretty good. It was, fun to see Jack Kaiser go out to New York and propose to his now fiance and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that was cool. I had no idea about that. So, I mean, that was cool. Speaking of documentaries, Sean, mailbag question for you. Have you watched the Connor Stallions documentary?
I watched about half of it.
Okay. We don't want to get into it too far then.
Have you watched the whole thing?
I did. I watched it yesterday.
I mean, actually, I've heard about, like, everything that came at the tail end, because, like, I just got so fed up with watching that first half of it, because there was zero accountability from him.
I know, right?
He obviously just denied anything.
It's everything.
Like, I'm a great sign stealer. That's basically his side of the story is, and I'm a great sign stealer,
right?
And that's it. You know,
and look, to
and a diehard Michigan fan.
Right. That was annoying, by the way. Yeah. I'm just gonna say that. But and they really hit that part home, like, way too much, that he was just a lifetime Michigan fan and all this other stuff. And it's like, well, no wonder he cheated for him. Like that doesn't even surprise me at this point. But I did find it somewhat fascinating, when he was at the Naval Academy and his entire job was trying to steal their signs, and he came up with a pattern and all this stuff. And you've got to be pretty smart, obviously, to be able to do a lot of that stuff. But when he got to Michigan, he just took it too far.
Yeah.
Like, you're clearly good at what you do, but he didn't have to take it to that next level, which he clearly did.
All he had to do was do what he did when he was at Navy.
Right.
And they probably within the rules.
Correct.
Within the rules, whatever's on the TV copy or whatever's going on from the sidelines, just do that. Because as he said, he had this massive catalog of, like, every sign that you could imagine.
And took pictures of himself doing it. Like, that was actually really impressive. And then he would memorize all of them and then try and figure them out and all, like, that part I was fascinated by, because that takes kind of a special mind to be able to do a lot of that kind of stuff. And so that impressed me. But it's like, dude, your love of Michigan blinded you clearly. And that's why you did what you did.
And he still loves Michigan. He went to the national championship game. They actually talked to him at the national championship game. Right. And, like,
well, because he was in hiding, and then he decided to kind of come out of hiding and all this other stuff. And it's funny, because the guy who's in charge of, like, Barstool, is it Portnoy or whatever his name is? And they asked him about being
about the Central Michigan thing.
Yes.
I did see that in there.
Yes. Yeah. And Portnoy was like, he told me that was him. Like, he flat out said it.
Yeah.
And then they flash over to Connor Stallions, and he's like, this guy doesn't even look like me, as he's holding it next to his face. And my daughter, who had just happened to walk in the room at that time, she's like, why is he holding a picture of himself?
Because, like, if that wasn't him, are you telling me, like, how hard is it for Central Michigan to figure out who is or isn't on the staff that looks like that?
I know. And they've got, like, all these security videos of the people that he bought tickets for filming the entire game. And, like,
but they just happened to send him. They just happened to send him. They always just happened to be sitting across the field from the team that Michigan was going to play with a perfect shot of the sidelines. They just happened to send him, video on the phone of guys, going through the signs. That's all that was.
Just hilarious.
I mean, it is. What struck me is, like, this guy, apparently he decided, like, now this is other stuff that I've read. I don't know if it actually came up in the sign stealer, but, like, his intention to go to the Naval Academy was all part of his long-term plan of being a coach at Michigan.
Yes.
He thought that it was going to, like, prepare him better the discipline and just everything, strategic things that he was going to learn. So he went to the Naval Academy and all the things, and not just the Naval Academy, but obviously he became a Marine. And when you go through the Naval Academy, you decide, are you going to be a Marine or are you going to be in the Navy? And he chose Marines, which, you know, just from a, that's again, the tougher path to go Marine Corps versus Navy. And that's the way. So he becomes a commissioned officer in the Marine Corps.
Right.
And then starts flying around the country, going to Michigan games and other games. But like on the weekends, he's renting out his house while he's sleeping in his car so that he can afford these flights and all this different stuff. But this was all part of his grand plan.
Yes.
Naval Academy, become a Marine Corps officer so that it would lead to him being the head coach at Michigan one day.
Because he had done research, and it's like, I forget what the number was. It was like 10 or 11 out of the top 15 all-time winningest college football coaches had all been in the military in some form or fashion. And so he decided that's the path. And so that's what he did. And it doesn't sound like he was ever, you know, overseas or anything like that. It sounds like he was always stateside.
Yeah.
And so he was able to fly to these games on his own dime and was like a volunteer staffer for Michigan.
Right. While he's still in the Marines.
Yes. While he's still in the Marines. Yes.
And then he gets out and he finally gets his first dream job.
I had no idea that part, like some of that backstory stuff, I did not know. Like, I did not know he was a Michigan fan. I did not know he was in the Marines. Like, I didn't know that kind of stuff. But the documentary did a good job of laying out pretty much the case against him. And they would ask him about it, and he'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, it's like, but yeah, it was, you know.
Everything I'm doing is completely normal, man.
Yeah.
I'm just out here stealing signs from Michigan.
And at the end, he's like, well, I didn't break any rules, but I definitely operated in the gray.
Oh.
It's okay, dude. Yeah, that means you broke rules.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to this stuff.
More questions. Yeah. Mark wants to know what we think about Northwestern, how Northwestern football players feel about playing on a makeshift lacrosse field for the next 2 years. Have you seen this setup that they've got over there?
First of all, the view is unbelievable.
I mean, it's beautiful, right? It's next to Lake Michigan. I mean, it looks great.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And look, it's a smaller stadium. I mean, it's pretty much
it'd be an awesome high school stadium.
Great call. Or a small college, you know, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Look, maybe I'm wrong here. And if somebody knows, please correct me. Northwestern wasn't selling out their stadium. Okay, they are now, and now they can say that they're playing in front of a sold out crowd and, you know, all this other stuff. Look, I think the vast majority of Northwestern football players have other aspirations. And while they are football players, don't get me wrong, I would kill to have my kid get a football scholarship to go to Northwestern. I don't care what stadium they're playing in. Okay. I don't think it matters that much. And the guys that are going to be around for the next 3-4 years will then be able to be in the new stadium and it'll be great. But yeah, I mean, it would suck a little bit if you're a senior or something like that. But I mean, it is a beautiful view. I mean, it's right on the lake right there. Mm-hmm. It's pretty awesome. But yeah. If you want this new stadium, you got to do this too. So, I mean, it's kind of a, if you want this, you got to do this.
Yeah. I mean, it stinks, but they are building them a new stadium. And that's, you know, this is a temporary stadium. And like when I was looking at it, when they kind of showed the aerial, you know, my first thought was, well, you know, man, it's too bad that like they didn't have more space there, because I think there is, like, I don't know if it's a practice field or what, like just build the actual stadium right there. I wonder how big the new one is going to be. I mean, it's going to be bigger than this one because, again, it is not big. It is like a small college or a high school.
Yeah.
Type field. They do have some suites, and you know, they've added more suites to kind of, you know, let the alums with the money and all that kind of stuff, you know, be able to drink their wine and eat their cheese and all that different kind of stuff. But it's a unique atmosphere.
Yeah.
It's not going to be the rowdiest atmosphere, but it's unique.
But again, is it ever at Northwestern?
Yeah. I think, you know, like down the line, I think it actually kind of be cool that they'll be able to say, yeah, we played in that funny little stadium
right?
By the lake when we were there.
I know, right? And Tom B says, has anyone seen the Northwestern football facility? It's the Taj Mahal. They have really nice facilities. I mean, they have really nice facilities at Northwestern, and they're all pretty new as well. So they're obviously putting some resources into this football program and into their athletics facility, you know, alone. Because I believe the soccer stadium is on the lake as well. So they've got some pretty cool facilities over there at Northwestern.
Light it. Hey, Irish Breakdown listeners, it's Urban Meyer. This fall, the game changes. Join me, Heisman Trophy winner Mark Ingram, and broadcaster Rob Stone as we bring you a new perspective on football and culture every week. We will be joined by the biggest name in sports and talk about everything inside and outside of the lines. Let us guide you through a new era of college football. Watch Triple Option on YouTube or listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts.
Salty wants to know, if Knapp continues to steadily improve, will he keep the starting left tackle spot next year?
It's a great question. I mean, he's obviously going to have, you know, 13 starts or 14 or 15 or whatever the number ends up being, and he's going to compete for it, though, because Charles Jagasaw is really freaking good, okay? And if Emil Wagner continues to also improve, he's going to be pretty good, too. And you're going to have four legit tackles competing for two spots.
Yeah.
At this
point. Because you're going to throw Gerby Lambert.
Correct.
Into the mix as well.
And it's not like you've got any interior guys that are going to be graduating that are starting right now that you could like move maybe, you know, Anthony Knapp into guard or something like that. So I would say if I was a betting man, I would say that the starting lineup for the offensive line in week one next year will be different than this year. But I, for the life of me, I can't tell you what the difference is going to be. And as Irish for Life says, that's a good problem to have.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest. It's something that I've thought about, but they've played one game this year. So let's get through
this year.
See how this year, and then we'll talk about, you know, next year. And, you know, cause it's going to come up. If Anthony Knapp plays well this season,
right,
there's going to be a major competition for that job in the spring and next fall training camp. And we're going to be having conversations about who's going to win that thing, and someone's probably going to surprise us again for the third straight year. So, really good question. And speaking of which, where was the other one? Oh, do you see the offense trying to let the ball? Good question, Joe. And I forgot that this one was up here. I had to scroll all the way to the top. Do you see the offense trying to let the ball fly this weekend, since the offensive line should be in a more manageable situation?
Yeah, I think you'll see the offense kind of open it up a little bit more. I think the offense was very deliberate this past week. It was part of their game plan, is they didn't, you know, especially once the game started to wear on a little bit, because they did call some shot plays, but they just didn't work out. For better or for worse, they didn't work out. I think as the game went on and they kind of saw how the flow of the game was going, I do think that they kind of tightened up the reins a little bit and decided, hey, you know, this is a zero score game or a one score game. Like, let's not put the ball in position to turn it over.
No sense taking dumb chances.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they felt good about where they were and how they were executing and things like that. But I think at some point they're like, you know what? I think we're just better off keeping it a little bit more closer to the vest. And they ended up with a double digit win. So I think, you know, when it's all said and done, you can't be upset with it. But yes, I think they will.
These next 3 weeks, I think we're going to see a lot more shots downfield. They've got to figure out just how much that can be a part of their offense. They want it to be part of their offense. It's why, you know, again, part of why you get Riley Leonard and add these veteran receivers to the mix. They want to be more downfield, and that's got to be part of their arsenal ultimately as you go on. And you're competing in the college football playoff and those kind of things a bit against the better teams on the schedule. That's got to be a part of it. And, you know, by the time you get there, you are completely expecting that your offensive line is going to be in a different state than it was in week one against a really good line like Texas A&M. I mean,
right.
Like I said earlier this week, it's going to look different the rest of the season. It's going to look better.
Sure.
Especially for this next month, just based on the difference in the level of the competition that you're going to play.
Agreed.
Salty wants to know if Yuengling Lager is the unofficial beverage of the IB tailgate. I mean, you can make it that if you want. You can
BYOB. All right. So if that's what you want it to be, buddy, you can do that. But it is BYOB.
We've talked about this before. You know, you want it, if you want to butter me up, all you got to do is show up with an ice cold Yuengling.
You are a Yuengling fan.
I am.
Because back in the, like, you can get it around here now, but
yeah.
Not that long ago, I remember people going out of town and you bringing it back or bringing it back for you.
That's
or,
right.
You know, that kind of thing. So
making the runs to Ohio and that's exactly right.
I remember.
Yep. Jesse would, when he would see his lady friends in Ohio, he would go, you know, stop at the Meijer over there and throw a couple cases in the trunk and
his lady friends,
all that good stuff. Yep. From Robert, I suppose the idea of lowering academic standards so Notre Dame can recruit better players. Oh, he opposes. Sorry, I oppose the idea. This Purdue grad feels strongly the appeal of Notre Dame football is ability to win without lowering standards. So not really a question, but what do you think?
Look, Robert, they're not lowering standards. I don't know where you got that, but there's plenty of people that Notre Dame doesn't recruit, like some guys in their own backyard that they have no desire to recruit because they cannot cut it academically. I mean, bottom line. And so they are not lowering the standards at all. Now, they are adjusting some things to, because there are certain players, certain kids, certain students that, you know, once they get here, they can handle the workload, right? And there may be like some chances that they take on a guy or something along those lines, but there has to be tangible evidence that they're going to be able to handle the workload once they arrive. So they're not lowering the standards by any stretch.
Right. Because like, even in the last couple of years, like Marcus Freeman, what he's not doing is kind of that profile of, well, you've got to be this before I'm going to recruit you. They're going to recruit who they think are the best players. And then if they commit, you know, the vetting process kind of begins as they go through their academics and stuff like that. But there have been a decommitment or two that had to do with the admission process and whether or not they were actually going to get into the school once they had committed. You know, they got to the point where they found out they weren't going to be able to fit.
That's
that.
Happened
they
had, numerous
so they
times.
Had to, so they had to decommit and go elsewhere, basically.
Yep. And he's clarifying in the chat. Here, I'll pull it up so we can read it. He says, in past, people like Paul Hornung suggested doing so, even though it's not an issue now. It has been mentioned in years past when they weren't winning. I understand what you're saying, Robert, but there's a reason that they haven't done that, because they do have standards, and I don't think that's going to change anytime soon, because it doesn't need to.
Yeah, and I think that question is a lot less of an issue right now, as we've seen. Again, like, especially when you look at current recruiting and stuff like that, which we'll touch on. I think we can kind of touch on that in rapid fire when we've got some different stuff that we're going to get to. Joe wants to know, tougher game for the Irish, Georgia Tech or Florida State? Well, right now I'd say Georgia Tech.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, they have shown that they can win football games. Florida State, they were competitive against Georgia Tech in game one. They weren't competitive against Boston College. So they got a lot of self-scouting to do. They're going to have to figure some stuff out over there in Tallahassee before I think that that's even going to be a tough game right now. I mean, is there still time to change it to an afternoon game, Sean? Because that'd be great.
I hope so.
Yes.
That was actually something I was thinking, again, like when random thoughts pop into my head, I put it on my note page. Should they flip the Louisville and Florida State? You know, which one is prime time?
Well, you know, the jury's still out about Louisville at the moment, but I agree with you. Like at least right now,
it's looking like a better matchup.
So the new AP poll came out yesterday. Was Florida State even in it?
No.
I didn't think that they would be. Okay. So now they're unranked. They were the 10th best team in the country, supposedly, and now they're unranked. If that's not a giant warning sign on the transfer portal and building your team that way, I don't know what is. Sometimes it works, like last year, and sometimes it doesn't, like this year.
We talked tailgate earlier, Irish for Life 99. No Ivy tailgate that we know of. Like Vince was saying, you know, maybe Louisville, like if Brian's parents are.
Yeah,
I would think that that might be one that they would come in for as opposed to.
He mentioned it in one of the shows that we did, but I'll be honest, I don't remember which one it was. I think it was a night game, but I just can't remember.
Well, if it's a night game, it's Florida State then.
I just can't remember. So, but listen, if there's going to be a tailgate, it will be well publicized prior. So.
I'm writing down. A future rapid fire question. Ooh. So,
okay.
I don't want to waste it all in the middle of a mailbag.
Like, agreed.
We can dig into it a little bit.
Agreed.
So you just gave me a little,
I love it.
Gave me a little thought there. Mark, if you're hanging around, he got a lot of questions in the chat tonight. If you could be a little more specific on this, I don't think I've heard where do you weigh in on the Swoops, SAS, Lieberman controversy on Caitlin Clark? I didn't realize there was a new Caitlin Clark controversy. So, I don't
know what it is either.
I mean, there's been enough stupid Caitlin Clark controversy that I'm not saying she's stupid. I'm saying the controversies that have surrounded her have been stupid, just with everything that has followed her into the WNBA. It's like they just mismanaged like the whole what. They had this huge shining star. And when you look at every metric, they're getting better ratings across the board. And her, you know, games that she plays in are up there at the top. And oh, by the way, they started 1-8. Now they're going to be a playoff team. They're above 500. You know, it's like things have worked out pretty well for Caitlin Clark. Maybe they should have just kind of bought into Caitlin Clark a little bit earlier instead of everybody telling her that she wasn't good enough to play and everything else. Swoops pulled from a TV broadcast as being negative on Caitlin. I'll have to look into that.
If that's the case and that's the reason why, I don't like that. An analyst should be able to analyze. I mean, you should be able to be negative if you want to be negative. You should be able to be positive if you want to be positive.
You have to keep some objectivity if you're going to sit in that seat. You can't just go out of your way to bash one player.
So if that's the case. Then,
like, I don't know what was said, but the case, that you know, they literally pulled her from a TV broadcast because of it.
Yikes.
Then. But there's just been a lot of negativity.
She's got her haters. There's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think she deserves it, frankly.
Nope. Nick, Happy Gilmore 2 is happening. Thoughts?
I'm skeptical, just as I was with the second Top Gun, because we always bring that up.
Uh-huh.
So I'm skeptical, but I'm sure that I will see it. And I don't know. I'm not a big fan of retreads, and I feel like they're retreading it a little bit.
I mean, in the post Top Gun,
I know.
Like, you've got Happy Gilmore 2. You've got Beetlejuice.
Yeah, that's
coming
true.
Out. I've heard mixed reviews on that, even though I still want to see it. I think there's another one, another kind of that's going to be coming out as well. I can't think of it off.
There's a lot of sequels coming out, and that's kind of been the norm here for the past, you know, however many years. It just seems like nobody's got an original thought anymore. So, but, you know, how good could it be? Bob Barker's dead.
Yeah. Dodgeball. It's a Dodgeball sequel, right?
Really?
A Dodgeball.
Oh, that's right. We did talk about that, didn't we?
Yeah, that's what it is. I knew it was something with Vince Vaughn. I think that's going to be interesting. He's got this show called Bad Monkey on Apple right now. And it's not bad, just a little slow pace.
Okay.
You know, but you still got some decent Vince Vaughn humor and stuff.
I'm a big fan of the Vince Vaughn humor. I'm not going to lie. I'm not an Apple subscriber, so I do not. I was intrigued by it, but not enough to drop the coinage.
Which is more impactful? Bo Collins, 5 catches for 56 yards, or the great ones, 3 for 3 and a PI for 42 yards, 3 converting first downs on scoring drives. I know which direction you're going, Salty. Jesse drew up that, the third down conversion play on the pass to Jaden Greathouse yesterday. I thought that they're like that was one of the more pivotal plays in the game. Yeah. Converting, considering that was only their second third down conversion. But I've got to put them pretty equal because Bo Collins came up pretty clutch with that 20-yard catch as well.
In the same drive.
Yeah, exactly. Again, you can cheer for other guys, Salty.
It's allowed. You
can cheer for other guys.
It's absolutely allowed.
Cheer for the whole team. Sloppy Joe says, Swoops wasn't pulled for being negative. She was pulled for making up certain stats to diminish Caitlin Clark's college records. Refused to apologize, then refused to be objective with Clark.
I mean, if she's making stuff up and it's just always negative, then yeah, I mean, that's probably in line for, at the very least, a talking to. But, you know, again, I'd have to hear what she was saying and fact check it and all that stuff before I really feel good about making a claim. But if that is true, that's not cool.
No. I'll do a little research on this, and if we want to talk about it at a later date,
fair enough.
We can.
It's got rapid fire potential.
Yeah, I think so. We'll try to work it in there. Oh, Sloppy Joe says the reason Clark had those records was because she was in college for 5 years, which is obviously not true.
So yeah. She was a four-year player, right?
Yeah. Interesting.
That's such an easily fact-checkable stat. You know what I mean?
Colin Cowherd plays with facts like that, though, all the time. And Colin Cowherd's not getting suspended, you know? So
it's fair. But Colin Cowherd is also not...
But he's not doing game broadcasts. I think that there's a different standard when you're talking about game broadcasts versus an opinion show.
And he's not denigrating the face of an entire league on a regular basis either. You know what I mean? And so I'm sure that was part of it, too. I mean, they don't want a negative slant.
Yeah,
Caitlin Clark. I mean, I
don't
that.
Understand why these players are so mad at Caitlin Clark for being good.
I know.
Basically.
Like she's stealing their thunder. Like, look, if she gets paid more, you get paid more. That's how it works. It's okay to be okay with it, you know?
Yep. Nick says, in or out on Chris Mitchell having 100 plus yards and 2 touchdowns this week. I've got to be out on that.
Yeah, right, me too. Now,
I didn't see anything. I didn't see, because like I've said before, I don't know if Chris Mitchell is just a two catch, maybe one big play per game kind of guy, or if he's actually going to be consistent. Based on what we saw in camp and what we saw in game one, I kind of lean more towards he's not going to be a big volume kind of guy.
Yeah.
So I've got to be out on that.
Agreed.
No disagreement.